Since there is nothing to attain, the Bodhisattva lives by Prajna Paramita. From the Heart Sutra. I was watching this show, some of you may have seen it, called Alone. It's about people trying to survive all alone out in the woods, and they only have very limited supplies. You know, like they can each bring 10 things, and there are rules on what they can and cannot bring. So it doesn't seem that they have very much. Maybe like a tarp and, you know, some wire and an axe or something like that, but they don't bring guns and, you know, et cetera. And there was this, I haven't watched all the seasons at all, not even close, but I watched season one, which is primarily about people seeming to nearly starve to death and having to leave due to heart failure and near heart failure and things like that. And I skipped ahead to season six, which I heard is good. And in season six, which I'm watching now, there's one person. He's been out in the woods now all alone for about 14 days. And it doesn't seem that food is their primary struggle in this season. It's more wild animals scare a number of them away, and there's water. It can be hard to collect safe drinking water and shelter, and there's a lot of rain, a little cold. But it seems like one of the main things they struggle with is, you know, just their own heart, mind, their own minds. And about 14 days in, one of these people says that doing this has been incredibly difficult because it strips away, the word I think he uses is something like it obliterates, I don't remember, but it's every distraction. So, you know, he says, I don't have my phone, I don't have a computer, I don't have TV, there's not even a couch to sit on, you know, there's nothing to sit on, there's just me and my thoughts. And a number of them talk about that, that, you know, what seems to be most difficult in this particular season, it's part of the reason I kind of like it, for many of them is what arises in their own mind. And it certainly made me think about what it can be like to come and sit on the cushion and what it can be like to go to a sesshin. I've thought before, and probably you have too, that, you know, all we're doing here is just sitting still. And yet, what comes up for us often as we sit still can be quite powerful. We might, particularly when we are held in the context of a more intensive and longer duration of experience like a sesshin, we may find that the things that come up for us are not necessarily things that are pleasant or comfortable. It may be very difficult. And then there are, of course, periods of maybe elation, relief, and ecstasy. And it's funny to even just experience that and watch the way the mind reacts to these things. You know, when the good stuff comes up, we say, oh, I finally got it. I finally figured out how to do this. You know, I'm finally liberated from all obstructions, you know, as we feel sort of ecstatic. And then maybe a few hours later, we're kind of tired and something went wrong. We didn't get the coffee that we like. Boy, it can be something really stupid, you know. But that's how the human mind is. Something didn't go quite the way we wanted it to. And off we go, plummeting into hell realms. And these hell realms, I think when we initially encounter our own mind, in particular, in such a kind of clear context, what I mean by that is without any of the distractions, it's just so clearly our own mind that's at work. But as the stories arise, we won't necessarily believe this is like my own mind creating this. We'll think it really is because I didn't get coffee. It really is because, you know, I had to go third for Doksan instead of second. I can't believe that. Whatever our own trigger might have been. But more often, it's actually something that's kind of deep. It can also happen as we sit here on the cushion in the evening or in a sesshin, that something arises for us that is difficult, that we might call it ancient karma. This could be some profound wounding, perhaps, that we experienced when we were younger, or even more recently, maybe a grave loss. And as these painful situations arise within us, we may try to use our practice to repress these thoughts and feelings. We may judge them. We may say, hey, I'm just sitting on the cushion. Why is this coming up? This is ridiculous. I want to get control back. Who's in charge? And that actually is an interesting question, isn't it? Who is in charge? I think we often imagine when we practice that we are in charge of our practice. That when I practice well, good things happen. When I practice poorly, I suffer. That's an incredible recipe for self-judgment, for heaping suffering on suffering. Perhaps we begin working on things. We begin working on our mind. We turn it into a project. A little bit like a home improvement project, but this time we're working on ourselves. And of course, that's endless. And our encouragement is to meet this pain, this suffering, what arises from life a little bit more gently if we can, with a little less judgment, a little bit more compassion, a little bit of sweetness. And of course, that can then become our next project. I'll become sweeter, etc. At some point, I think maybe we realize that we actually can't do it ourselves. And there's something wonderful about that kind of failure. Wow, I can't control what's happening in my mind. I can't even control how I'm meeting what's happening in my mind. And that bowing down to that, that acceptance that sometimes life is hard, that sometimes we feel pain, that sometimes we suffer. How sweet it is to just let that be true. It's not maybe the kind of compassion that we imagine, the kind that we construct through our effort and energy. But we find ourselves bowing down to what we meet inside of ourselves. Perhaps because we realize, you know, I seem to have no other option. I've tried everything else, so we just bow down to what has arisen. My teacher used to have a phrase to describe a kind of faith that we can develop through this practice of simply seeing things as they are, just meeting ourselves as we are. In this place of no distraction, in this place of silence, of just sitting, a place where there's nothing I can do, I can't turn on the TV, etc., etc., I just meet myself. George Bowman used to say, I've told you this, circling the stupa of the self endlessly. And these powerful thoughts and stories and almost archetypal currents of energy arise in us deeper, some things that we don't control just emerge out of our maybe unconscious mind, even seem to reside in the cells of our body and begin to express themselves. And we go through our efforts of control, like the control center, turning all the knobs, and nothing seems to work. And eventually, maybe we bow. And in this kind of giving up, we find that that's, as I've said before, that that's all we've ever really wanted, was just to be allowed to be ourselves. How sweet that is. How nothing was actually required of us. It just happened by our showing up and sitting on the cushion. In fact, we just had to kind of get out of our own way. And I was saying my teacher used to describe this as these knots that seem to become clearer in us. We see, oh, here's a knot. I'm all bound up in this place, and we see it. And we seem to struggle with it. But the more, it's like one of those traps, the more you try to pull your finger out, the tighter it gets. You struggle and try to worm your way around it, you just can't seem to get out of it. So my teacher would describe these places as self-releasing. It's as if some of these old wounds or trauma or fears, current fears, whatever it may be, as if they just kind of live in the cells of our body and just need to be compassionately witnessed. That's it, the whole job. And you know, we don't have to go searching for them either. You don't have to come to the Christian, I'm going to find a knot today and witness it. They come, right? This is life. Life will bring things up for us. So we take the cushion and it just offers this place of permission for things to unfold at this cellular level, things to just self-release. So sometimes I think of sitting as just a matter of kind of getting out of my own way, you know, just take the seat and do the simple practice. Be embodied, be present, be slightly curious, not necessarily in an intellectual way. And this is an important point. Once those stories get rolling along about what this is and what caused it and what was the first cause, you see, there is no first cause. We like to imagine, if I could figure out the first cause of this pain that's in me, I could resolve it. But we'd have to go back hundreds of generations. Our stories, to certain extents, are valuable because they open us to the way that things are, to what we are currently experiencing. I think that's important. Sometimes we need that kind of processing to open up. And at some point, after we've told that story enough times, you may find you get a little bored with it. And here's an opportunity for us to begin to enter into the body of sensation itself. And sure, it may come with a little label that helps it open a bit more. Maybe you say, oh God, always striving, I'm always striving. And you feel the pain of that, but the word can't possibly capture it. And the origin story can't convey what's alive in you now. And so we go a little deeper. We enter into the actual physical sensations, that cellular level, something kind of beyond words, beyond what language can describe. And we just let it be. We don't have to do anything. Just let it be. Be with it. Of course, we do have our teachings, our Dharma teachings of impermanence, which actually can be some consolation in those moments, but they can also just make us impatient, right? He said everything's impermanent. Why isn't this pain going away? So for me, you know, even the Dharma doesn't help in these places. You know, these dark caves where there's no light. That beautiful Wendell Berry poem, when it's dark, just go dark. You don't have to bring a light into these places. You can just not know and just meet this body of sensation in its murky muddiness. And things just open. We can't make that happen. We can't force it. We can't. I mean, you can try. Go ahead and try. We do. We try endlessly until we realize that it doesn't work. So this possibility of encountering ourselves and allowing these wounded places to open up. Like flowers. They don't appear that way at first. From a distance, they're so frightening. And we don't have to force anything. Just entrust to the wisdom of your body. Your body communicating what needs to happen moment after moment. Entrusting to the cushion, entrusting to the process, to our forms. Giving over the locus of control, the one in the center of it all who keeps narrating your life. Those are just stories. They can't possibly convey the depth of everything that we are. And these kind of unconscious places become conscious and untie a little bit and loosen. And we don't need our stories so much anymore. We know we're so much more than our stories. So we have this beautiful line from the Heart Sutra. Nothing to attain. With nothing to attain, the Bodhisattva lives by Prajna Paramita. This wisdom of intimacy, this wisdom of pure encounter. I think it's easy to be really scared of what we'll find when we throw ourselves in, throw ourselves into the oven again and again. Feels like an oven here tonight. What will emerge? You know, and again, we constantly go in and want to just order the good stuff. Again, wanting to have that kind of control. What if we just say, whatever comes, it's my life. Whatever comes, I'll be with it. And yes, there will be times of enormous beauty. Times of body and mind falling completely away. Intimacy with a kind of beauty and vastness, openness. The question is, can we experience the beauty in the caves as well, in the muddy places? Because they will continue to come. Can we allow for the flowering of these deep wounded places as well? And appreciate the sweetness that's there. It's interesting to talk to people who have tried meditating and who are really scared of it. You talk about how hard it is. My mother one time told me she tried to sit and she said an enormous void opened up in front of her. And she got up and ran away. She never sat again. It's not for everybody. It can be frightening. But these fearsome places are often signaling to us that there is something quite rich right there in front of us. If we're willing to stay with it. And we don't need to force our way into the most painful places. That's not the goal. But they will open. Thank you.